Time once again for Dialogue Conspiracy with May Brussel. For the past 14 years, May has been researching and uncovering facts and evidence from between the lines of the news and placing them in a more thorough perspective of how conspiracy, political assassination, and abuses of power affect us all. Dialogue Conspiracy originates with KLRB-FM in Carmel, California. And now, May Brussel.
Good evening. This is May Brussel. It's October the 30th, 1977, and this is Dialogue Conspiracy number 283. I want to go into a few miscellaneous items that are in the news and keep up with those because they do pile up on my desk, and they're things that get left behind that I want to share with you on the program. And I also want to talk briefly about some of the evidence of mind control and political assassinations, which we've been hearing about with the CIA involvements that I believe took place in the John Kennedy assassination. I've talked in Dialogue Conspiracy before about the hypnosis of Jack Ruby, the man who shot Lee Harvey Oswald, and how he had been with hypnotists Billy Del Mar and David Ferry, and had contacts with the CIA through Warren Carroll, and was in the company of hypnotists, and was controlled to believe that he would be a hero if he shot John Kennedy. And, of course, it's my belief that this was prearranged. In the last 2 weeks, I've been doing extensive work and just completed a small article. It's an article, condensed information about Lee Harvey Oswald, the person Lee Harvey Oswald. I did it for an almanac, which will be coming out in about 6 months, and I'll describe it more later when it gets to press. But they asked me to write a condensation of everything that Lee Harvey Oswald said from the moment he was arrested, apprehended, or from the time John Kennedy was killed until Lee Harvey Oswald was killed, and that was 47 hours later. And in the course of going over that material, which I had read carefully for 14 years, I hadn't done the arrest of Lee Harvey Oswald maybe for 5 or 6 years because I was interested in Oswald the agent. And it was interesting for me to go back into this material that I had previously read and cross-filed. And I want to share with you some of the facts that were in the Warren Commission hearings in the 26 volumes that are apparent now as we look back at the new evidence of mind control. At least it's apparent to me, and I hope it will be to you eventually, how people can be influenced or even substituted as doubles, and then the joke is on us, and I'm not sure which way it is. But I went over this material of Lee Harvey Oswald. John Kennedy was killed at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, November 22, 1963. In the testimony of Roger Craig, the sheriff, who was in front of the Texas School Book Depository at the time of the assassination, Craig claims that he saw Lee Harvey Oswald leave from the front of the Texas School Book Depository and get in the car. A car honked, and a dark person. At the time, he said he was Negro, but he wasn't really that dark, and it could have been a Cuban. It wasn't, this person as a driver wasn't named as a anti-Castro Cuban or the kind that were arrested at Watergate, but it was described as a darker complexion person than Lee Harvey Oswald. Honked the horn of the car, and Oswald got into this automobile and drove away. This was later confirmed by a man called Lee Harvey Oswald in the office of Captain Fritz, the testimony of Captain Fritz. In that office with FBI agent James Hoste, Lee Harvey Oswald identified the car. He said, "Yes, I got into that car, but then everybody will know who I am now." He said the car belonged to Ruth Payne, whose home he was staying. Marina Oswald stayed there. He also kept a rooming house on Beckley. He had his own room, but he was at this home on the weekends. Well, Sheriff Craig is dead. He was shot at, harassed, and driven to, in quotes, a suicide, so we don't know whether or not Oswald got in the front of that car. There was a Mr. Worrell, who was a witness that the Warren Commission chose to use as the proper witness for Lee Harvey Oswald's exit from the school book depository, and Worrell claims that Oswald left out of the back of the building and walked from the school book depository. Then Oswald was supposed to get on a bus. Mr. Worrell is dead, so we can't confirm whether Sheriff Craig or Worrell were telling the truth, and of course Lee Harvey Oswald is dead. Next, Lee Harvey Oswald got on a bus and went a few blocks. He walked 7 blocks, got on a bus, and drove a few blocks. The bus driver, Mr. McWaters, identified him under the strangest circumstances, and I won't go into the lineup now, but another date. And the bus driver is dead. So if he was wrong, And Mr. Worrell was wrong and Sheriff Craig was right. We won't know. Next, Lee Harvey Oswald got into a taxi cab, and William Whaley, the taxi cab driver who said he transported him, is also dead. So we won't know whether Oswald got into a white station wagon and went back to the rooming house, or even went in the rooming house, or whether it was another person who left from the back and got in the bus and cab. We do know that one Lee Harvey Oswald was at Sheriff Craig's office at 4 o'clock in the afternoon talking to FBI agent Hoste and angry at him for propositioning his wife and offering him citizenship, which we can go into. But Oswald's bus driver and cab driver are dead, and then he went to the rooming house where Mrs. Earlene Roberts saw a police car honk and identified some numbers on the license while Lee Harvey Oswald was upstairs changing his clothes. And Mrs. Roberts is dead. The next, Lee Harvey Oswald was sitting in a theater where he was apprehended by no less than 16 people that came upon him for this simple arrest in the Texas theater. And as he left the theater, they told him to put a coat over his head so nobody would see him. And this is important because if one Oswald left in the car of that honk that Sheriff Craig saw, he may have been taken to the police department for further discussions, and at least until the midnight press conference at 11:20, so that people identify that as Lee Harvey Oswald. But it's interesting that the one in the theater was told to put a coat over him. And then after his transport to the police department at 2:15 p.m., he was taken out of the car, and they threw an overcoat over his face, and this time he protested. And I put this in the article I did. He said, "Why should I hide my face? I haven't done anything." So a man was picked up at the theater and by 16 officers who said in the car, "My only crime was resisting arrest. I didn't kill anybody, didn't shoot anybody. I don't know what I'm here for." But they threw something over him leaving the theater and again entering the police department after those 16 officers converged. Now, according to the Warren Commission hearings, the 26 volumes of hearings and exhibits, there were interrogations in Captain Fritz's office on Friday at 2:25, 4:40, 7:30, 7:55, late at night. And then there were five-minute lineups several times for Lee Harvey Oswald to be identified by some witnesses of the Tippit killing. Officer J.D. Tippit had been killed. But when it came time to fingerprint Lee Harvey Oswald or take paraffin tests of him in Captain Fritz's office, it was not done in the ordinary lab, crime lab, or wherever they take it. And the witnesses admitted, Captain Fritz, that this was unusual, that when a person is arrested, they're taken to a certain identification bureau where they're searched and physically examined for markings and so forth, but not Lee Harvey Oswald. He was only taken to Captain Fritz's office. When it came time for the arraignment of charging him with killing Officer Tippit, he again was taken in Captain Fritz's office. So nobody in the jail saw this person or knew one person from the other if there were two different Oswalds in that building. And there's no reason not to believe if there were two Oswalds in Fort Worth at the same time and two in Dallas and two in New Orleans and two in Mexico, it stands to reason that maybe both of these could be interchanged in there until one possibly was assured of a getaway. The arraignment was done in Captain Fritz's office. Then he was charged early Saturday morning, 1:30 in the morning, for killing John Kennedy. And again, it was done in Captain Fritz's office. And they said, "Is this unusual?" And they said, "Yes, it's unusual." They said, "Isn't this usually done in court? Shouldn't it be done Monday morning when he's charged with these crimes?" He was told of the crime he's being charged with, and he had no attorney. And the witnesses agreed that he should be taken before a judge, and he should have been taken before a court. But Lee Harvey Oswald, or whoever that was, wasn't taken to a court. It was done, the arraignment, the physical paraffin test, the fingerprints in Fritz's office. There were nobody, no secretaries there. Every secretary in the Dallas jail is sent home. That Friday, John Kennedy was killed at 12:30, and the secretaries were all sent home, so that at 2:15 in the afternoon, when a suspect is brought in for a police killing and for the killing of the President of the United States, they were told to go home, we don't need you. They had the prime suspect of the nation or of the world at that moment, and they went home. There were no tape recorders allowed, no stenographers, and the few notes that were taken were never produced verbatim. So that we don't have the voice recordings of if it was a Lee Harvey Oswald or what the man was saying. If there may have been a man who left the back of the depository who was given instructions, the same man that had been at the rifle range or had a scope put on a gun and left Oswald's name, or the man that was at the car agency driving a car, this same person could possibly be programmed or told where to go and how to get to a theater and be picked up, because we know that neither one of them killed Officer J.D. Tippit. At least the researchers know. Most of the country is kept in the dark by the major media. So there were no visual pieces of proof that Lee Harvey Oswald was in that room at all. Whoever was fingerprinted and arraigned before this judge, the judge is brought in at 1 in the morning and he's hanging around the jail, is the only person whose testimony you can go by. There was a Mr. Hicks who said that the arraignment was impossible at 1:30 in the morning because he was in Captain Fritz's office and there's only one door to the office and there was no way that this arraignment could take place. So this person, whoever it was, the suspect, couldn't possibly be seen by anybody. And I think that's interesting. As I say, there's no voice prints except in that one period where Lee Harvey Oswald is picked up. He's taken 11:20 at night on Friday night, and Jack Ruby is present. And there were members of the press there, and they heard Lee Harvey Oswald say, "I didn't kill anybody, and I'm a patsy." And some of this was put to a voice print. George O'Toole did it. He wrote a book about Lee Harvey Oswald and the voice print. But this, again, could have been a double saying, "I didn't kill anybody." I don't believe Lee Harvey Oswald killed anybody, but because it's the only recording of the voice, it may not even be Lee Harvey Oswald's voice. After the afternoon discussion with Captain Fritz and Sheriff Craig, one Oswald could have been displaced and another put in his place. As I say, he didn't go down a hall where fingerprints were taken. He didn't go to a court. He wasn't in any particular room, and he wasn't seen. The body was described in the physical examination, FBI reports, as being 5'9", 140 pounds, with light blue-gray eyes and no scars of any kind. When the FBI did the physical examination, and they came in late at night, he actually wasn't fingerprinted and searched till late in the day. And that's an interesting fact, too. Not as soon as he came in, but late in the day, and at 10 in the evening, there were more fingerprints, and at 12 at night, there were more fingerprints. And this body that they had there had no scars on him listed, and the autopsy, also, they made no note of scars. Yet Lee Harvey Oswald had a very serious mastoid operation when he was younger, and he had definite scar on his arm, and there was supposed to be a cut on his wrist when he was at the Soviet Union. I believe he had faked a suicide attempt in order to stay in the Soviet Union, but he did have a slash on his wrist. So this body in the Dallas jail had no mastectomy and no cut on the arm like the Oswald and the Marines, and no scar on the wrist. The public press conference was held by Captain Fritz. It was a 5-minute press conference, and I think it served several purposes. I think it was to show that this person was not abused, and because people were afraid that he would be harmed in the Dallas jail. And also, it gave Jack Ruby a chance to get up close to see the person that he would be shooting the next fall. Well, this is 11 o'clock at night, 11:20 actually on Friday night, and Jack Ruby would be in the jail at 11:21 Sunday morning. It was 24 hours plus that night. The press conference was held, and Captain Fritz said if anybody asks any questions or gets too close to him, they'd be taken away. And the man who was in the press conference was totally confused. He didn't know about the Tippit murder, the officer J.D. Tippit's murder. In fact, he says in the police department he didn't even know John Conley had been shot. Nobody had told him anything. He didn't know what was going on. And he says he didn't know John Kennedy had been killed. And this is perfectly possible if the Oswald double was used and he has total ignorance to what's going on. Now, Saturday afternoon, Marina Oswald visited Lee Harvey Oswald. And, of course, they're talking through a glass partition. They're not up close. And the wife, Marina, and his mother, Marguerite, came to see this person. They were allowed, I think, a total of 30 minutes together through telephones where everything was recorded. And he said to Marina Oswald, according to what she testified or mentioned, he told her, "It's all right, we can say anything here." That's what he's told Marina. But when his brother came at 4:20, he said everything between us is tape recorded. They couldn't be physically in the same room or touch each other, but he warned him, everything here is tape recorded. And that turned out to be true, because Jack Ruby talked to his family and friends on this same two-way telephone communication from a room to a partition, and then it was written up in an FBI report, the conversation that Jack Ruby had, so they did have recorders or the capacity to take it down. It'd be interesting to get voice prints of Lee Harvey Oswald talking to his family through those telephones and compare them to the man who was at the press conference the night before, because this was in the afternoon on Saturday, and the other one was at 11:20 Friday night. Marguerite Oswald just said, "How are you?" And he said, "I'm all right. They're not hurting me. They just roughed me up a little." And the conversation was really very superficial. And with his wife, the same thing. "Don't worry. I'm all right. I don't know what's going on. You know, and the Red Cross will take care of you," and so forth. But when his brother came to see him after the mother and wife had left, by 4:10 on Saturday afternoon, Robert Oswald visited Lee Harvey Oswald, and he has this to say. It was in Volume 1 of the Commission hearings, his testimony, page 462. He said he couldn't understand anything about his brother because he says his answers were mechanical, and I was not talking to the Lee I knew. He felt that he was too pat. There were pat answers to what they were talking about. And Mr. Jenner said, "Were you able to get through to him? Did you feel you got through to him?" And Robert Oswald said, "No, sir, I could not." And Albert Jenner said, "Will you elaborate on your expression? I was not talking to the Lee I knew." And he said, "I was referring, the first part of our discussion was very mechanical. I had the feeling he wasn't exposing himself to me, and it wasn't the Oswald I knew." After Robert Oswald left the interviewing room with his brother, the room where he could visit him, he was allowed 10 minutes and came away with the distinct impression and made notes in a diary that that wasn't the Lee Harvey Oswald that he had known. He went to Mr. Tom Kelly of the Secret Service and Mr. Mike Howard of the Secret Service, who then asked him, "What did your brother say?" And he said, "I related to them the best I could my entire conversation with Oswald. We were facing room to room to each other. If I had been with him, I could have learned more, or something I would have learned about whether or not he was guilty or how much he was involved in the assassination of the president." And Albert Jenner said, "Could you elaborate? If you talk person to person with him and there is no bugging in your conversation, could you have gotten more information?" And he said, "That is correct." Now, the Mike Howard that was with Robert Oswald at the time of the interview was a Secret Service agent that went on and kept Marina Oswald secluded, and then coincidentally, or not coincidentally, was on the airplane when ex-President Lyndon Johnson had his fatal heart attack and died. That was 3 months after Lyndon Johnson said, "We have a murder incorporated in the Caribbean," and said "we," not Fidel Castro, but he meant our government, and he referred to those assassination teams, the anti-Castro Cubans, I'm sure, and the Robert Mayhew gang from the Hughes organization, and I'm sure he was terrified of them all himself. I've read that he was terrified of being killed himself. Well, Mike Howard was the agent assigned to Lyndon Johnson, and he was the one that was draining Robert Oswald for everything he could say, and the conclusion of Robert Oswald was that this isn't the Lee. Now, Lee Harvey Oswald hadn't changed that much, and everything he did say that I transcribed was half a pleading to someone get me a lawyer and help me with, I didn't do anything wrong. I hit a cop in the theater, but I was resisting arrest. He said, "I'm not resisting arrest. I'm defending myself." And he was totally confused through those entire 2 days about who he was or what was happening or why he was there. And he kept saying, "Well, somebody please tell me what's going on." And I'm just wondering if the man that Robert Oswald saw on Saturday afternoon that went on to be killed later was the Lee Harvey Oswald that was substituted. I think there was a time in Captain Fritz's office on Sunday morning, just before he was taken down the elevator, where it's possible that Lee Harvey Oswald, the one that had been in the Soviet Union, was talking to FBI agent James Hostie. And the men that were in the room, they're like Postmaster Holmes and FBI agent Hostie, did not go down on the elevator. They did not go with Lee Harvey Oswald. And I still don't know yet. It's taken 14 years to separate the doubles and the area of the doubles. But sometimes I believe they were interchanged and not seen in the jail, and that the one that was shot with the marks that didn't have the scars was not Lee Harvey Oswald, but that the other one was present until one was shot and probably put on an elevator and sent down and killed. And as I say, it's going to take a little more time to put it together, but the pieces slowly are coming in, even though many of these witnesses are dead. But there are more questions still asked and not being answered by the committee in Washington. It should be into this area, but their research is working on it and will continue to ask these questions. We're not getting any help from the Justice Department or the FBI. And I do want to discuss with you a conversation I had with our local FBI, because it's just a microcosm of what's going over the entire United States. There's a new FBI director here on the Monterey Peninsula by the name of Robert Bunch. And I read an article in the Pine Cone, it's a small local newspaper. He had a luncheon at the Rancho Cañada Golf Course here. And there was a quotation on the matter of national interest and controversy. Bunch was asked about the Kennedy assassination, and he said in quotes, "I would be shocked and amazed if there was more than one little malcontent pipsqueak like Lee Harvey Oswald involved. Many persons want to seem to believe there were conspiracies in connection with the assassination of John and Robert, but he discounted these theories by authors like Mark Lane and Richard Gregory," meaning Dick Gregory. Well, I called Mr. Bunch, and I said that I was offended because I've been on the Monterey Peninsula 6 years, on the radio 6 years, been up here 14 years, and there isn't room on this Monterey Peninsula for his version of the assassination or in my version, because he's a paid public servant. He hasn't done the work, and I feel that he's here discrediting what I do, that when I go and lecture or talk on KLRB about the conspiracy that killed John Kennedy, I don't have the authority or the badge of the macho FBI man moving into town and taking over the bureau in this Monterey Peninsula and saying, oh, that's a lot of hogwash. These people, many persons want to believe. And I said, would you like to see evidence on the assassination of John Kennedy? And he said, well, no, he's not investigating that. And I said, well, then why do you give an opinion on it? As I say, I've been on the air and you're out socially, and you're throwing these out as theories, and you're the top dog policeman around here, and I would just like to talk to you about this. And he denied making these statements about Pipsqueak Oswald and no conspiracy. And I said, would you call the Pine Cone and retract them? And he said no, and he said they're not official, they're off the cuff. And I explained that I think that they're very official, because I'm sure that every Kiwanis and Rotary Club he goes to, every police convention, every FBI convention, he carries the ghost of J. Edgar Hoover on his back, and Mr. Kelly and Mr. Johnson, if he lives long enough to be the head of the FBI, if he's not killed off first, he's going to carry this cloak or mantle of work. And I said that there's only two alternatives to this matter. One is that you examine the evidence and then shut up, or when you're interviewed, you simply say, I have no opinion on the matter because I have not seen the evidence. And I said, being as we taxpayers pay your money, and there's 100 like you or 1,000 like you over all the United States, they're in Montana and Houston and Gilroy, I don't know if they have their own FBI man, but San Francisco, Los Angeles, the major cities all over the United States, and I'm sure they're always asked, what about the assassination? The official position of the FBI is that there's no conspiracy, and this is wrong. He has not gone into William Sullivan and the Division 5 of the FBI, or the role of FBI chief, one of the heads in Los Angeles, Wes Graff, with his connections to Ed Davis, the chief of police down there, and the Robert Kennedy assassination, or C. Arnold Smith and the funding that Wes Graff got when he retired as FBI by this criminal from the Nixon mafia organization. And I don't think that he should throw these things off as theories. I may take it too seriously, but I don't think I do. It's time to speak up to these public officials. They have no expertise. And the reason I mention it is that you can do in your own hometown, if you read an article about the FBI agent, or you can call them up and ask them, what is your opinion of this, if you're a researcher, and say, look, we've had enough of this crap from you. either come to such and such house where the research is available, or get these documents from the Warren Commission that are under sworn testimony that prove without any doubt that Lee Harvey Oswald never touched and owned a gun, or shut up. And furthermore, I said, you're living on a peninsula where there's Pebble Beach, there's been assassination teams in California, a president of the United States could be murdered here. You wouldn't know perjury if you saw it. You wouldn't know falsified evidence or planted evidence. And I really don't think that you could solve a crime if you accept this kind of evidence as fact. And if you haven't seen the evidence, then quit telling the people that there was no conspiracy. And I think that in your hometowns, wherever you get these tapes, you might just catch your FBI man continuing this lie and at least get him to admit he hasn't seen the evidence. And Mr. Bunch did say that he would come to the house and see some of the material, and I'll invite him in a week or two. I never thought I would be too busy to set the time aside, but I'm doing some other writing now on a book, and I really don't have time to see him. But I'm going to make a point of letting him come to the house and see the massive amount of evidence and know that the evidence exists of the role of the FBI with Lee Harvey Oswald, and that each generation of FBI man doesn't have to keep getting our tax money to cover up these crimes over and over again. Another cover-up is still going on at Vacaville. The October 13th article in San Francisco Chronicle, the head of Vacaville, Dr. Lawrence Clanon, C-L-A-N-O-N, acts surprised that the CIA was doing experiments. He talks about them being in the 1960s and giving smart pills to increase learning ability. That's bullcrap again. This man, as I've told you before, had Robert Hyde there where they were scheduling brain surgery to take out his brains. And they were involved in psychosurgery. They're involved in chemical experiments at the present time. Vacaville is still doing CIA legwork. It was the home of Donald DeFries and Colston Westbrook. And they're still covering up. And the minute the story came out about the CIA doing mind control, they covered it up by saying, oh, yes, that was in the past. I wish the CIA had told us. The minute it came out, the CIA has 400 agents in the news media. Good old agent Carl Bernstein gets $30,000 to write an article. That was in the past. This isn't in the past. It happened then. It's happening now. And the exposés will continue, like the assassinations will continue, until they admit that they're continuing. And Jimmy Carter's administration hasn't changed any bit. If Ronald Reagan were president, he couldn't have covered up any better than Jimmy Carter is doing it. And the cover-up just keeps going on. It's up to people to spread the word, read your newspapers, call talk shows, write letters to the editors, and tell them we want the truth out without any more of these massive TV cover-up shows and articles covering up. And the burden of proof on them is that it's covered up when we know it's still going on. Well, my time is up. This is Dialogue Conspiracy. It's Mae Brussel. I'll see you next week with some more information on these terrible little crimes against us. And until then, take care and see you next week.
You've been listening to Dialogue Conspiracy with Mae Brussel.